You've found the podcast where driving matters. Whether you haul, commute, or cruise, we want you to love what you drive. We're here to help you find usability and fun. From first-time buyers to jaded experts, we believe everyone is one great car away from being car-obsessed. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy Tuesday. I'm living in a world of Christmas music. I haven't shared that with you yet.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It happened last weekend, but it is a constant thing. It's either silence or Christmas music.
No.
It's back.
Oh.
I'm trying to do many, many other things. Or turn on music when I'm in the car or going to the gym because I'm like, music I can control. It's not Christmas.
Music
it's
I
back.
Can control.
Yeah, I just kind of have to grip my teeth in this season. We hope you're actually having a really good holiday season. We're between Thanksgiving and Christmas in the U.S. A couple of reminders for you from our schedule perspective. We are only a few podcasts away from the end of our year. We will not be doing a podcast on Friday, the 23rd of December. Also, we will not have one the following Tuesday and Friday. That's the 27th or the 30th of December. We're taking that week and a half off here at Everyday Driver. We're going to try to not work through it. I'm saying that to myself.
Yeah.
But anyway, we still have a lot of great stuff coming. Also, between now and the holidays, I want to prep you right now. If you are sitting around, and I know you will be, at this holiday with your family, and you get to that moment where, what are we going to do next? I can solve it. We at Everyday Driver have thought about you because
yes, we have.
Thursday the 22nd is our target date to release the North Trip, which means it will be right before Christmas. It'll be roughly an hour long. Because it's us, you know it will be almost entirely perfectly family-friendly. There might be a couple of jokes, and they were like, yeah, okay, that wasn't great. But anyway, the point is, it's something you can watch with the entire family. We would love for you to. It'll be an hour's worth of Christmas-friendly content, even though we don't talk about Christmas. But we do go to the mountains and snow.
There's no Christmas music in it, though, so good news.
So you can actually, if you're like me, you can take a reprieve from Christmas music. The entire family can enjoy a road trip about cars in gorgeous scenery. That is coming soon for your Christmas viewing pleasure.
That puts the onus on you to get things done. You realize,
oh yeah, no
to
pressure.
Get it all
no, I'm at a good place to actually.
Okay, good.
Work
because
for that
we are
date.
Filming two TV,
yes,
possibly TV pieces
we are,
between
yes.
now and then.
We are definitely,
and we'll post on Instagram to let you know what those are. But some fun vehicles coming in the month of December. We also recently drove the 2022 Audi e-tron GT Quattro
again.
If you remember, we drove that before. It was actually a privately owned car, mm-hmm. and we didn't have it for very long. So we
True.
Drove that as a TV piece for the last season, mm-hmm. and we compared it against the Mercedes EQS, both about the same. Same price,
yeah.
and very different personalities from electric sedans.
Totally different approach of those two companies.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So this came back into our lives from Audi. Thank you, Audi, very much. In tactical green metallic.
This is not a great color. I'm
really
sorry.
Isn't.
It's not, it doesn't flatter the car.
Pay $595 for a color that really doesn't belong on this car.
It struck me as one of those colors that the manufacturer sends out on the press car because it's a color they want to promote and they know is not going to get ordered. That's how it struck me.
Except I saw another one in Park City.
No, really?
And I thought it was the same. I thought, who else had the... Nope, that's privately owned. Because I saw their license tag. It was registered.
No.
Somebody
no,
else
no. No, no, no.
bought
that's, no.
that car.
That's all bad.
That color.
Many of you said you didn't like the color, and one of you actually said it was the crayon that never gets used, which is my new favorite. That is a fantastic way to put it. But I'm saying that only because there are color choices on this car. The one we had before was white. I will say on the build sheet for Audi, the color we just had doesn't look like it does on the website. You could order that and be like, I kind of like that.
It's gold.
And then it arrives and it's not gold. It's a greeny brown.
Yeah. Brown, yeah. green. Green, brown.
Yes. This is at least a color.
True.
And the point is,
it's at least a color.
It doesn't take away
not
the
that
fact.
One.
True. Doesn't take away any color but that. Go back to white. The point is, it didn't take away the fact that we actually really like this electric car.
Fully loaded, this was $118,740. Now, it is not the RS e-tron. I would like to drive that car. That's even more e-tron GT goodness.
And it's also even more expensive, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah.
But yeah,
So 118, almost 120 grand. It does have a 93 kilowatt hour battery with active liquid cooling. And get this, a single speed front transmission and a two speed rear transmission. $7,200 for adaptive cruise assist. It has the LED interior lighting plus package, park assist. It also has the performance package for $6,000, which includes the Audi Laser Light, the lights, e-torque vectoring plus, carbon Atlas inlays.
Wow.
And it does have the power steering plus with rear wheel steering, including the interior leather package for $4,000 and technology features like wireless Apple CarPlay and a destination charge, which adds up to $118,000, almost $119,000.
It's a lot of money. Now, it's cool, but that is a lot of money.
It really is. And for a car that does lose, just like any EV, in cold weather, range. It depends on the temperature outside. You cannot look at the mileage remaining and what it says and always count on that. Well, I've gone a mile, so it should deduct 1 mile off how long the range says and calculates. No. In this car, you want to drive it hard and fast. Even though it does have a good regenerative braking system, it does add power back, but there's always that feathering, the hypermiling thing that creeps into your driving.
Yeah, yeah.
But of all the electric sedans we've driven thus far, we have not tested a Taycan yet. I'm confident that we will like the Taycan just as much as this, but it drives great.
Yeah, this one and the i4 that we had are by far the best electric sedans we've driven. And this is one that actually has some sporting intentions. And I said it in our TV piece, which is actually now on YouTube and on Amazon Prime. I said it there, and that is, this is the interesting electric car. I've talked about this before. I'm interested in recommending electric cars when I feel like they are better than other offerings from that manufacturer.
Yeah.
If it's an electric car and it's not any better or it's worse than their gas offerings, I'm not ever going to recommend the electric car.
Which happens. Absolutely. You would think it wouldn't happen, but it does.
But if you have an electric car that's better than your other offerings, I will tell people to rush out and get it. And in this case, this is a nice shift for Audi because it takes away that traditional Audi understeer idea. Because of the way that the electric car works, it has really good handling. You can tell the Porsche breeding, and I mean that as a major compliment. I think this is one of the best cars Audi makes. I think it's an elevation. I just wish the range was better, but that's where we are right now.
It really is. But when you sit inside, it feels like a genuine car. It doesn't feel like technology from the future that you as a human are going to have to adapt to and hopefully like. It feels like a car, and then, oh, it's an Audi, and oh, it's an EV.
There's
layers to discovery with this car, which make it a pleasure to drive, really. And we're sad to see it go. But we posted pictures on our social media channels. Check that out there, and you can see green-brown. Brown green.
We are now accepting your submissions for what this color should actually be called.
It's because not good.
Yeah, there it is.
Our friends at Blip Shift have released a couple of shirts. Time to Make the Donuts 2 and Drifting Through the Snow 2. There's a couple more coming, which we'll announce when they're available. But for right now, there's Christmas themes. You can get the making the donuts, freshly made.
If
donuts.
You're like me, and everybody in the family is wearing Christmas clothing. And you are the alternate person going, I have to do this, but I need it to be me. We have Christmas driving shirts coming, and that's actually really cool.
Put it this way. If you are forced at any time to listen to Christmas music against your will, retaliate by buying some of these shirts and wearing them proudly.
Drifting Through Christmas is actually really cool because it does look like a Christmas shirt from far away, and you get close and like, oh, it's another car shirt, which is kind of perfect.
Before we get to our topic Tuesday, the 2024 Acura Integra Type S rumor has been confirmed, apparently by Acura. We recently drove the new Integra.
Yes, we did.
That will be a test drive coming soon, actually
coming this week.
However, this is supposed to have everything the Civic Type R does without the crazy wing. Better styling, hatch shape, and kind of the one you want if you don't want to go as crazy and deal with the emotional baggage or the car baggage that car has. But still,
I can't be seen in a Type R. Can't do it.
You've got the Integra as a choice, but we know very little about everything right now. It's just the fact that Acura is going to make the car.
Yeah.
And we applaud Acura for doing that. I hope it's all-wheel drive, but we shall see.
Yeah.
Am I going to continue to hope?
I can't imagine since the actual normal Integra isn't, which that we have the review coming, that they would make that shift. But that is an accurate thing, though, is that super handling all-wheel drive is the best thing they do. Our friends at Hagerty are always doing something new, and they've decided to have a new Hagerty Marketplace. It's your hub for buying and selling cool cars. With their reimagined classified experience, buyers can shop for vehicles for sale from the Hagerty Drivers Club members, and sellers get access to millions of car lovers.
There's all kinds of cars on there, too, so no matter what you're into, you'll find something you love. And with classifieds, there's no buyer's fees, regardless of vehicle price. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, we highly suggest heading over to Hagerty Marketplace and taking a look around. We know you'll love it.
We have one of those fighting words Topic Tuesdays. It's a Topic Tuesday that is pretty much perfect. It comes to us actually from Chance. We got into a discussion with Chance recently about it, and we thought we should air this out with you guys because it's one of those things where this is the intention of a Topic Tuesday. If you're sitting around with a bunch of your car friends and you're going to debate it and you're not actually going to come to us all, those are our favorite Topic Tuesdays because we're all just car crazy people. This is what is the definition of a good driver.
We've touched on this. We haven't really gone in depth until now, and I'm excited to do so because Chance brought this up. Like we said, And I had a lot of questions immediately.
Mm.
Beyond the fact, are there many people who admit to being bad drivers? And we've heard from you, and thank you guys for writing to us. There are people who admit to being bad at it. Mm-hmm. My question is, why don't you get good at it? But still, let's start off with, how do insurance companies define this? Because they give good driver discounts, right?
And they have a category for this, for sure, yeah.
Well, on State Farm's website, it means you're accident-free and you make efforts to educate yourself on how to become a better driver, but that is for drivers under the age of 25.
Mm.
My question is, why isn't continuing education a thing?
Sure.
It is for almost every other aspect in our lives.
Yeah.
And I admit that I am really intrigued with cooking. I am not the greatest cook. I don't know a lot.
Yeah.
I've taken some knife skills classes and I know how to make some basic things, but a chef, I am not. But it intrigues me and I want to get better. I actually kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I make something that is good to eat and I made it, it's kind of satisfying.
Bonus.
So
yeah.
It's,
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of my new interest that I'm nurturing over time, you know, but I actually like cooking and I want to get better at it. Mm-hmm. How do you get better at it? Yes, by doing, but also by learning, because there is that thing about anything in life. And that is, well, I've always done it this way.
Yeah.
That must mean I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
You go to any company. Well, we've always done it this way. Well, let me show you a solution to make it better, whether it's accounting, whether it's software for design or engineering. Well, yeah, you've done it that way and you've gotten this far. Good job.
Yeah.
Here's new solutions, new ways to do your job better. It depends on how open you are.
That's the challenge
in receiving
for sure.
That.
Yeah.
Because there's so much ego involved with good driving, driving in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, who is it that gets to independently verify this about all of us? Short of insurance companies looking upon our record and saying, okay, you're accident free, you haven't had any speeding tickets, but is that the only thing that defines good driving?
I agree with you. Yes, because to your point here, if you have a speeding ticket, you could definitely be a better driver than somebody that has never gotten a speeding. That's absolutely viable.
You've just gotten caught.
Yes, exactly.
That's it.
Most people, not all, most people, when you are driving fast on purpose, are paying more attention, not less. So you are a person who you don't like to drive.
Yeah.
You drive slowly everywhere you go. Most of your driving is involved in a commute situation, and you mostly look at your phone, but you never hit anybody.
Ooh.
Technically, even if you have a little dongle in your OBD port where the insurance company can track you, you look like a great driver to them. But do they know about the fact that you can't stay in your lane very well, or the people behind you are concerned because you're looking at your phone? They can't tell that.
Or you've had near misses.
Yes.
Just the fact that you're not pinballing your way up the street to get to your house and hitting mailboxes and other cars.
Congratulations.
Doesn't mean you're good.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah. What if you've had speeding tickets but no accidents? What if the accident wasn't your fault?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm still a good driver. Who can verify that? You got in an accident.
Yes.
But wait. So get this. For the very last place F1 driver in the 2022 season, that would be Nicholas Latifi, who finished dead last. Or from IndyCar, Stefan Wilson. He was ranked 35 out of 35 drivers. Last place for the 2022 season for both F1 and IndyCar. Are both of these gentlemen bad drivers?
That is a fantastic question.
They're last. You're dead last. You're not just last by you're last.
You are the worst of this group of drivers, but every one of us listening would struggle to beat them on a track situation. With identical cars, we would struggle
they
to even compete.
They will smoke all of us.
Yes.
You pick the event, they'll smoke us.
And we will sit there every single weekend there is F1 and yell at the TV for them being such bad. This is armchair quarterbacking for driving. Oh, I can't believe you couldn't throw that far. I couldn't believe you can drive better than that. While you sit there and eat your Cheetos, which I'm raising my hand right now. I've done this. Yes. I've done it.
I guarantee you Nicholas Latifi can beat me around any Formula One track in any car. He can beat me. That's humbling to think about. But you're in the professional ranks. You're the professional top of the class, top of this motorsport driver, but you're still last.
That's great.
Somebody will always, for every season, ever since motorsports happened, that's the reason the second car was built, to be faster than the first.
Yes, it
so
was.
That's when motorsports happened. But since then, there will always be somebody who's last, but is still a better driver. So what is the gradient? what is the food pyramid for good drivers?
That's excellent.
Who's
that's
on
really
top
good.
And who
yeah.
gets to verify this? Mm-hmm. Who gets to say, besides insurance companies, that all they see is just the data? Well, but let's go the other way. They're not sitting next to you going,
right.
You know what? You know, turn signals were invented for a reason. And you know, you shouldn't just rely on the center screen when you're backing up. You should actually look over your shoulder. And
yes,
those mirrors are attached to the car for a reason too.
Well, and we've seen plenty of people that are fast. We all have. All of you listening have done this. You've seen plenty of people that are fast drivers, but very good drivers. And you've seen people that are slow drivers that are terrible. But you would think on the general metric, the general consensus that people as a whole have is that, well, going faster is more dangerous, which I do not believe. But going faster is more dangerous. And when you see new laws on cars and all this kind of stuff, it always is centered around, well, faster is more dangerous. And sometimes the slow person is horrifying.
Here's another thought. If you do something boneheaded, does that mean you're a bad driver? Are your good driver claims suddenly revoked? Or was it a bad choice on that particular day? You had a bad day. The weather was bad. You were thinking about something else. You got into a fight. Something else happened. Extraneous happened. And you made a bad choice. Does that affect the whole timeline and career of your driving record?
Excellent question.
You did a boneheaded thing,
but
you got away with it.
Mm.
It didn't result in a speeding ticket or an accident.
It's
you skidded, I caught it, or I missed the thing barely, or something. Was that a stupid choice in that moment? Because that's a lot of what we see.
Yeah.
That was a stupid choice. That was a dumb move. Why'd you do that? Maybe they're still a good driver overall.
That's a great point, because you're essentially saying, since we are all imperfect people, when we have that really, really awful moment where you, again, if you get away with it, you hopefully are self-aware enough to be like, I really shouldn't have done that. But you're right. Does that completely discount everything that's come before? That's a great question.
Because it could be a choice in the moment. You just chose poorly.
Yeah, you didn't just screw
today.
Up. You actually made a bad choice. I get where you're going.
It's not a consistent pattern.
Yeah,
my
grandmother
always told me, you're allowed one mistake a day. And she always said it tongue in cheek, you know?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So growing up, I was always
But there's wisdom in that too.
There is. And she's like, well, I used up mine today. I'm so sorry I did this. I burned the bread, you know?
Yeah, or whatever it is.
Something. Yeah. I burned the pies. And I was like, well, that's my mistake for today. And I'm going, really? Just one? That's all we're allotted every day? Hopefully not. But good drivers have qualities about them. Being able to control the vehicle in any situation.
Mm.
And any is capitalized there. They've got basic mechanical skills and self-discipline, but there are many drivers who don't have the ability to control the vehicle in any situation.
Sure.
It's most. So that's what technology does to bridge the gap.
Sure.
All of Subaru's technology to bridge the lane keeping assist. And that's what car manufacturers are trying to do, because you're right, we're all imperfect.
Yeah.
But how much of that technology is dumped into the cars to bridge the gap between this is when your skill set ends, and yet you still needed some to complete the task here that you didn't. That's why you wrecked.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's a race car or somebody on the street. So we add tires and technology. How much of that and how much of that we use and how much you turn off when you get into the car depends on your comfort and your skill level and your ability to recognize that and admit. It should be like an end user license agreement. How are
I'm
you
sure
feeling
it is.
Today?
I'm
Did
sure
you
it is.
Did you fight this morning? No. Are you feeling good about yourself? Yeah. Did you have breakfast? Did you start your engine properly? Okay. Yeah, I did. I had my coffee. I'm feeling energetic. I'm feeling good about myself. Okay. Let's turn off 80% of the nannies today.
What you're also talking about is, and we don't do this, you're talking about the difference between how we get in a car and what happens when a pilot does a pre-flight check.
Okay.
Pilots do pre-flight checks. I don't care if you are your first time walking up to a Cessna, or if you got your bush plane for the third time today, or you are a professional that actually flies a commercial airliner. There is a checklist of things to make sure you have done.
Except for the airplane repo guys. I love that show on Discovery. Airplane Repo is so great.
They just get it to take off.
I know it's super contrived. I don't care. It's so like edge of your seat. The guy's going to come out of the hangar with a hammer and chase the pilot down. And he's just flipping switches and getting that thing in the air. No pre-flight. I didn't check the fuel.
Sure.
I don't know how the engine
extenuating circumstances.
Done.
They take your point. But
he's just getting that sucker in the air and risking his life.
Yeah.
That's the only time it happens. But you're right. Every time I got in the airplane with my dad, he'd hand me the flip chart.
The checklist. Yeah.
And it took forever. There's a pre-flight. And then before you actually roll onto the active runway, you sit right there before you turn onto onto active and looking at flaps, looking at ailerons, looking around the airplane. Let's check this. Let's do engine run up.
But we do, and we all, and I'm calling out Paul and I as well, because we all do this. We all just get in the car and go.
There's
you get in the
car
you start
pre-flight.
It, and you go. It's just, we're done. I'm going to drive it.
What's the pre-drive?
Exactly. So there's none of that. I'm not suggesting there should be, but I'm suggesting this is how ubiquitous this is. But I also think the issue with the good driver conundrum is I think driving might be unique in activities we regularly do. If you think about any other activity, let's just say you know somebody that's in their 40s or 50s and plays basketball all the time.
Okay.
Like a lot.
Okay.
Okay. If you're in your 40s and 50s and you haven't played basketball in a while and you go try it, you're going to do it really badly. But you are also aware of the fact that if you step on the court with that person, you're going to be bad at this. It's been a while, okay?
Yeah.
Because we, and I'm thinking about this because my son is in seventh grade.
Okay.
And one of the big focuses of middle school in the Park City area is they expose the kids to lots of things.
Which is great.
Lots of kinds of music, lots of kinds of sports, lots of kinds of science, math. They just exposed to lots of little
teasing
areas.
Out kids' abilities.
They don't spend a lot of time. Because I remember, you know, you're in high school and college, you have this this course for the entire time.
Yeah.
They're doing things in little tiny segments of a few weeks to touch on lots of things. Mm. Not only discover aptitude, but just see what sparks in certain kids. So that as you get into high school and college, you can focus. And this is where I'm going.
Not everybody's going to be a ski racer that comes from Park City.
Exactly right. Exactly right. But here's the thing. If you know somebody that was a professional athlete, their growing up years looked awfully different than the person that became an accountant.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Even if the person that became an accountant played the same sport up through high school. But at some point, the professional defined themselves as better than and focused on being a professional athlete. And the person that was like, I was good through high school. And then I realized I wasn't going to be good at that anymore. And I moved on and I decided to focus on this.
I just play Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen all the time, over and over.
All the time.
Right.
It's on a loop. Me and my band have covered it. Yeah, exactly. But the point I'm making here is driving is the rare thing that we do for our lifetime, whether we like it or want to or not.
That's a good point.
You're not skiing because you hate it. You don't go play tennis because I don't like tennis, but we play tennis every single day.
Today's Tuesday. You know what that means.
Tennis Tuesdays. Oh, no. No, but this is the thing. Driving is the rare thing that we all partake of that many of us wish we didn't have to. Some of us do and are totally on autopilot about it. And others of us do and really, really like it. But we keep doing it, which spreads out the good and the bad on a spectrum that doesn't exist anywhere else, because as adults, we just stop doing stuff we either aren't good at or don't like. We just stop, but not with driving.
That's a great point. When I worked in the software industry, everybody had their area of expertise. I didn't meet anybody who knew it all.
Sure.
That's why software companies are full of experts, but they have their little niche. They have their corner, and they're really good, and they know everything about their corner.
Sure.
But then just slightly outside of that, they're dumb as a box of rocks. Ignorant. I don't know about that. Tell me. And they go visit the expert over here to collaborate on a project to push the company forward, make money. And so you would go find who you needed to help you with a project, especially in sales. And you know, who can I pull in, the experts? And that's what I did. I was a subject matter expert in consumer product design and vehicles and automotive design. And so, you know, outside of that, I didn't know a whole lot then about lightweighting. I'm a designer. I come from that world.
Yeah.
So everybody in that industry, though, not only are they paid to get better, they want to know more. They want to expand their skill set, their desire in that sphere. They want to know more. But you're right. If you're not interested in driving, you don't care about expanding your skills, buying a set of winter wheels and tires. You know what? I'm going to just be self-disciplined, and I'm going to force myself to look in the mirrors. You and I do.
Yeah.
Because we're interested in it. We like it, enjoy it.
But that person is still doing the thing.
But you're still doing the thing without having the desire to get better. And that's most drivers, because all you do is renew your license.
Yeah.
Can you fog a mirror? Great. You're checked off.
Technically breathing. Read one of the lines on the eye chart.
For the next decade, at
least. You're right.
Until, we just need a new photo, and that's all you really need. A new test? No, you don't need to do that. That's why we see a proliferation of bad habits.
Yes.
I've always done it this way. How do we get around that? It's an impossible task. But ultimately, I believe A good driver is and will be somebody who desires to continually get better. Like I'm talking about, as with any subject, if you're good at something, you want to keep getting better. You know, the people that say, I'm a student of life. Yeah, I mean, driving is a big one, but yeah, people do it without having the desire. So,
which is weird. I think it makes it very unique in our lives that it's in that category.
It really is.
I can't think
it's
of anything
of
else.
Only things.
With the but here's the thing, with the exception of something like laundry. But nobody like sets out to be a. I want to do
we
laundry.
Have machines for that. You know,
but my point is, there are things that we have to do that are just part of life. But I can't think of anything else that, in mass, everyone does it, and there's only a small subset that would actually like to be here.
Yikes!
You know,
when you remember a car that you're interested in, or you hear us debate a particular vehicle right here in the podcast, you need a way to search for it. Our friends at Autotempest.com focus their efforts where it's most important, helping you find great cars. Local, nationwide, big listings, or little ones.
Or maybe you're the person all your friends talk to when they're car shopping. The folks at Autotempest rely on word of mouth too, and you'll give your friends the tool they need when you tell them about Autotempest. Autotempest.com/everyday links you to nationwide listings from Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace, so it enables you to search beyond the limited distances those sites generally support.
So, when you're doing your drive homework, you're chasing the next family car, or just browsing to feed the disease, go to autotempest.com/everyday so they know that we sent you. Autotempest. All the cars. One search. Mark G. writes to us from South Carolina, asking, what is the challenger to a Miata? It's a bit of a double entendre there, a tongue-in-cheek play.
Yeah.
Here's his conundrum. He moved to the United States 4 years ago from a sunny coastal town in South Africa.
That was different.
South Africa to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, it is very rare to have V8 American muscle cars, with the small European engines taking preference.
Sure.
In South Africa, he always, during his working career, beginning at 23 years old, had a Miata as his weekend car. Perfect for this coastal hometown. Mm-hmm. He says loads of great scenic roads that warranted the top down and zooming through mountain passes. His love for the Miata came from wanting an old MGB. He took it for a drive and it really didn't do anything for him. It was hard and old and miserable.
But here's, this is pretty much the build sheet progression of why the Miata exists.
Yes, yes.
It was, let's take the old British roadster idea, which is old, hard, and miserable, doesn't run well, etc. The Elan, which everyone that says when it's driving is one of the best things ever, but how often does it run?
Beyond that.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, his dad suggested that he saw the Miata in Top Gear and he should try it out. After his first MX-5 test drive and zooming through traffic roundabouts, he was totally sold.
Love it.
So he bought a secondhand 04 red Miata. It was NB, and NB generation. Mm-hmm. He loved every moment of it, and boy, did it work.
Mm.
A few years later, he sold the NB and got a hardtop convertible NC. It was an 08.
Love it.
Also red. And he didn't keep the hardtop for too long. He didn't like the look of all red, and the top would squeak as he went over the bad South African roads.
Okay.
So he replaced it with an NC soft top from 2006, sold this car with his 04 Toyota Corolla when he moved to the States. And now in South Carolina, he's got a 100-mile daily round trip to work. He's got a trusty 2018 Camry.
Which I'm sure does that trip perfectly fine.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
And he listens to the podcast.
That's
really
great. Thank
it.
You.
Now that he's settled and hopefully going to stay, he's currently in the green card process. He has the burning desire for a new fun weekend car.
Hmm.
And here's the dilemma. He's driven the ND.
The current gen, yeah.
And he loves it.
Yeah, I can see that.
But he's driven the Dodge Challenger, and he loves it too.
So you went and drove the opposite, and the thing he couldn't get.
Opposite.
He said, I know
spectrum
it's totally
sacrifice,
different,
but opposite
he said
ends.
That V8, the pure American muscle car, he said he'd only ever seen one on TV, and now he's driving it. And he noted here, he said that Dodge themselves talk about that is the last of the true American muscle cars. And he said he just loves the look and there's nothing like it. And then he acknowledged, he said, look, I'm a small guy. I'm 5'6". I fit in everything. So you have to be practically swimming in the Challenger because the Challenger is a massive car.
Yeah, it is.
But he's just saying, I'm not a wrencher. I love the idea of having a small, light MX-5 Miata to do Sunday drives with the top down. He said, that's what I've always liked. But what about the Challenger?
I love it. It's so opposite. It's so awesome. I don't think anybody has been quite so torn, Mark, as to the opposite ends. It's more the cars in this range of all these great ones, which do I choose? Well, you can't go wrong if you really don't like it. Good news, you can switch. But that's my recipe for you. Mm. you've had two, you like the ND,
yeah.
and you're about to get one, but with a budget of $37,000, mm-hmm. you don't need to spend that much on an Miata. But that is not my recommendation for you because you've already experienced them.
Yeah, sure, sure,
a lot. And you know what they can do, even though you said your whole weekend thought is to find a back road and drop the top on a Sunday morning breakfast run. You love mm-hmm. doing that. But there's new experiences to be had. Mm. And it sounds like you're open to it just by yep. virtue of dropping everything, moving from South Africa. By the way, Mark, South Africa sounds very distant and romantic to our American ears.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
It sounds far away and amazing. And South Africa, what are the adventures and possibilities here? Yet you have come here to South Carolina.
True, true, true.
In the land of where BMW SUVs are built.
Yeah, that's true. Do you work for BMW? Separate
thing. We don't know. He might, uh-huh. actually. So should he buy a Challenger because he just loves it? And what you've experienced, Mark, is beyond the emotion of the Miata, you can't quite define why you want an American V8 Challenger, short of just the fact they might be going away, but you just want it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's other cars that you might want, but I think what you're seeking is the experience. Like I said, you've got the experience mindset.
Yeah, agreed.
You're open to that. Yeah. So even though you've driven it and you could go buy one, we could say, yes, buy one and you'd be happy and you've got the Challenger and I don't think you'd love it for very long.
I think you're probably right.
But there is a car that I do think you'd love and it is the all-American muscle car feeling with a V8.
You and I went this. I'm wondering if you and I went the same place. I really am.
Now that you say that, maybe we did. It's the most bang for the buck you can buy. It's what the brand was built on. Corvettes, my friend.
We did go the exact same place.
Good news, Mark. You're getting a Corvette. Now we have to decide which Corvette you're getting.
But here's the thing, Mark. Your opening question is Challenger to Miata. And you're asking, what is the bridge car? And this is why I landed on Corvette. Because if you think, what is classic American muscle, big V8, American history, something that would be a spaceship in South Africa, but yet what you like is fast, back road fun with the top down, which is not where the Challenger shines.
He's been spoiled by Miata handling too.
Yes. But the middle ground, if those are the bookends, the middle ground is a C7 Corvette.
Done and done. You can, agreed.
And you don't even need to get the convertible. You can get the Targa. The C7 manual Corvette gets you all of the V8 goodness, but it's much closer to the Miata as far as back road prowess is concerned. But you maintain, especially for someone Mark's size, you maintain the big American feel.
I mean, anything bigger than a Miata will feel
true,
big to Mark.
But I'm saying that's still a big American feeling car. Yeah. It's just it can do the back road thing at a level the Challenger never will.
I just don't think you're gonna dip into a corner and think, I got my whoa. What the heck? Welcome to weight and size and whoa.
And
it isn't a Miata.
Absolutely not. We've said before that the thing about the Challenger is it handles much better than you think it should, which is different than, wow, this handles great. Okay? It holds its own surprisingly well in any form. It's surprisingly agile for what it is, but it is fundamentally it weighs almost twice as much as the Miatas you've had. Ponder that for a second. Not quite,
you're
75% more than the Miatas that you've had. And probably 600 to 800 pounds, depending on how you spec it, 600 to 800 pounds more than any Corvette you would buy. That's a big, big car.
By the way, Mark, if you hadn't moved to South Carolina, if you had moved to Texas or New Mexico or Arizona, anywhere really in the Midwest, my recommendation for you would have changed, and I would have told you to buy the Challenger.
Because of big straight roads.
Yes.
Yeah.
But because you live in South Carolina and you are close to a lot of the great East Coast driving roads and tracks, it is Corvette. You can still do the Midwest thing in a Corvette. You can absolutely bomb across Texas.
You know what? Take a monster cross-country road trip, Mark, and whatever you get. You should do the classic American road trip.
You got to go to Buc-ee's. Pick a Buc-ee's location in Texas. They don't have Buc-ee's. They don't have Buc-ee's in South Africa.
It has been recommended recently.
Yes.
And I'm going to say this only half joking. It has been recommended recently that Paul is so on board with Buc-ee's that we should be sponsored by Buc-ee's. If you know someone that would like us to advertise for them, we would like to talk to them legitimately, because Paul is doing it for free almost daily. He is talking up Buc-ee's.
I can't wait to the day I get to go back.
I know.
They're nowhere near Utah, unfortunately.
They are nowhere near Utah.
We have heard of a couple going into Colorado.
We'll see.
Anyway, I've gone on about Buc-ee's, but you have to.
Guys, it's nuts.
Corvette. And make a beeline for the nearest Buc-ee's. All you have to do is Google them.
Uh-huh.
You'll find. I think there's one in Tennessee too. That's
yes,
pretty
there
close.
Is. Yes, there is.
But you can't go to the normal size, the small ones that are just sort of like, okay, it's filling station, and I don't really get it. You have to go to the massive, like Costco ran at high speed
into a gas station,
Exxon refinery in Texas. Come on.
Guys, I'm telling you, the Buc-ee's conversation in the South trip is some of my favorite stuff.
It's
really is
great. It's
the best.
Yeah. They have acres of jerky. They have a bakery.
You've never heard that sentence before. Welcome to the podcast. Acres
Holy
of jerky.
Cow.
Yes. We're still trying to recover from Buc-ee's. I don't even know what to say. There are a lot of really great audience questions. I'm going to start with three that go together. Because this could almost be its own topic Tuesday. Two of them from Instagram, MattGarrett82 and Peter, are you there? And then David from Facebook asked a question in the same vein. So I'm going to run through the questions real quick, and then I'm going to try to handle this. Matt Garrett says, can a car be too perfect? He has a BMW 330e M Motorsport as his family car, and he says, you know what? It's excellent. It's quick, well-balanced. Suspension is great. Steering is accurate. Plenty of grip. Performs wonderfully well. But he misses his previous cars. He had an S550 Mustang, which really wasn't nearly as refined. He had a BRZ and an MX-5, both of which he said were far more fun than the BMW has ever been. So his question is, do we crave imperfections in cars like we do in people? We've talked about this before. Yes is the short answer, but that relates to two other interesting questions. Peter, are you there? Says, how much do you care about luxury amenities versus raw, visceral driving experience? He says he understands tool for the job, but he said, is there a happy medium? Because he says, I love my old Miata, but I find myself appreciating a quiet cabin, a smooth ride, heated and cool seats, and more, which leads to David's question, which is, why do we ask for tech add-ons on our enthusiast cars? You guys are like a mind meld today. Ask for tech add-ons on our enthusiast cars? Is this self-defeating of our sports cars to have nannies and tech? Guys, it's like you were sitting in a room together and then went to separate computers to fire off questions.
That is a little weird.
It's very cool. First off, Matt and everybody listening, we talked about this before. Yes, cars can be too perfect. This is the problem with most electric cars to this point, is they are devoid of personality and they are refined with technology and programming to the point that everything works smoothly with as little of your involvement as humanly possible. They're just fast and quiet, and Apple CarPlay works unless you have a Tesla. And there's, you know, just everything is just, it's programmed, and there will be an update next week. And it is like using your phone, which none of us want to go back. I understand. None of us want to go back to the button phone in our pocket. I get it. But you don't, do you love your phone? Do you love your, I mean, it's like, you may need it. You may be addicted to it.
You like the convenience and the apps and the things that it provides your life.
But it's not like a heartwarming thing in your life. It's probably some old thing you had from when you were a kid or something that is not that nice that you connect with. And cars are that way. Cars with personality are like people with personality. You engage with them more. Mm-hmm. But Peter, I see your point. Look, I didn't understand amenities until I owned a Volkswagen Phaeton. And then
the
I was like,
the car that taught me all about
you know, and
amenities.
I had a Phaeton and a Lotus at the same time in my life.
It's true.
And this is honestly where I do believe in tools for jobs, because the Lotus is fantastic backing it down my driveway. And I don't say that. It's not hyperbole. I literally, by the time I get to into my drive, every time in that car, I'm like, I love this
You're
thing.
You're grinning.
I've gone like 100 feet. I've backed up. But I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah,
That's
yeah,
so
yeah.
Cool. That's so
but
cool.
On a 15-degree morning in the middle of the winter, when you climb into the Phaeton and the seat coddles you and everything suddenly heats up and it's ready to go and whisk you off somewhere while the world is freezing, I get it.
It's pretty awesome, too.
The problem is, David, yes, we ask our enthusiast cars, which should have personality and should have quirks and shouldn't have all the amenities, we get used to the amenities. Because I'll be honest, it's really nice when it's cold outside and I want my phone to work. And this, we talked about last podcast. I wish my 300ZX had Apple CarPlay.
We get used to these things and we like them. Yeah. And the heated, when I get in a car, especially an old car, I'm like, oh, no heated seats in here, huh? It's cold out today. We get used to those things and they become part of our comfort experience, not our driving experience.
Oh, yeah.
And so then we want comfort with our driving experience. And this is why so many current hypercars aren't all that interesting. That's right. I said it. Because go back to the 80s and 90s supercars that were quirky as the day is long.
True.
And you may not love it, but there was an experience there.
You paid extra to be uncomfortable.
Yes, to some degree.
Your feet aren't aligned with the steering column and things like that.
My feeling is I want the middle ground. I don't want all of that quirkiness. I want us to bring it around to like this is a proper driving experience. But yet, you know what? I don't want to be coddled. Not in my fun car.
That's true. That's good. We covered this even more extensively on a podcast not too long ago that had the Jolly Roger in the title.
Yes.
About making the martini a little dirtier with pour more olive juice martini.
We have fun with titles. And I do remember the dirty martini. Yes.
Muddy the waters more. And that should be part of EVs. That should be part of all cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I turned these series of things off that came on the performance and the prestige pack and I could choose. And I kind of turned all this off. And you know what? The car got sloppy, kind of angry, a little bit pissed off.
It got worse, but also better.
I have to wrestle this. Yeah. I have to drive this thing now. I'm up to the challenge. That should be a button somewhere on the steering wheel, down on the center console, somewhere.
It's the challenge me button. Whoa, this got squirrely.
Do I feel lucky? That's the button right down here. Our Close asks, what's all this about Mercedes charging a subscription fee to unlock the full performance of their EVs?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to shop.mbusa.com, this is the storefront for Mercedes-Benz in the U.S., it is called Acceleration Increase. Just scroll down a touch. Mm-hmm. According to an article on Business to Community by Alejandra Ariesh, the company will be charging $1,200 per year plus applicable taxes for drivers to be able to unlock the full potential of their Mercedes EQ electric powered vehicles in terms of performance. That's right. Make it faster. Currently, it only applies to two. A study from Cox Automotive released in April 2022 indicated that as much as 3/4 of the people surveyed were not willing to pay any additional monthly or annual fees for accessing their vehicle's capabilities. Alejandro goes on to say those that are willing to do it indicated that extra safety and performance and comfort features would be at the top of their list of preferred paid-in features. But the largest manufacturers like Ford, GM, and the Stellantarians are all aiming to generate as much as $20 billion from this income stream by 2030, meaning this trend is unlikely to go away.
I think it's become ubiquitous.
BMW
I hate to say
got
it.
Torched
yes,
for
they
talking
did.
About heated seats and even yes, daring to bring that up.
Yes.
Mercedes is not making any friends, I don't think, by... Oh, you want to go a little bit quicker? You want to unlock the full performance of your car? $1,200 extra?
This is the software influence. And it's two things. It's the software influence and it's the stock market influence. We want our stock to go up. And the stock market, watch what's happened in the last 20 years with software companies. You remember when, I'm going to feel like I'm going way back here, even though it was only like 10 years ago. Remember when you bought software? You remember that? When you went out to a store and there was a box on the store shelf that was the software that you wanted, and you took the box like a software, like an actual product, to the counter and you bought the software and you took it home and you put the software on your computer because you bought it. And now the software that you bought was yours on your computer. Remember that? It used to exist.
I actually do. That's where I started my career in
software. I know. And here's the thing. All of the software companies discovered, across the board, they discovered, If we license you the software, then you have to keep paying us.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll keep promising you all these updates and fixes and problems and send it, and it'll constantly be updating. But then you'll keep paying us every month because you want the new stuff. And then what they can do, it's the Netflix thing. We can promise subscribers every single month. And so the balance sheet looks really solid. And we can gain subscribers, but we also know we're going to make this much money. The problem with old-style software thinking was we have to put out a new version this year. And we're not going to make money, not going to make money, and then we have a release month and we make a ton of money. And then we make none. But now we can spread it out because we have subscription. Everyone in every industry is trying to go to a subscription model to apparently save themselves and their stock price. And I don't think with the move to electric, where everything is controlled by software, that any car maker will be saved from this thinking. I don't know how many will implement it, but I bet you they're all talking about it?
One tiny twist.
Okay.
And that is, cars are physical objects.
Yes.
Hackety hack hacker gives something new to code and download free software, open source, hackety hacketer, hacky hack.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There will be people that want to do that because it's a physical object.
Yes.
Many of them will be connected. I hate to say it. And when you're out of compliance, shut you down mm-hmm. from afar.
Mm-hmm.
But this just gives the interest to coders to try to circumvent
sure.
this issue and not just defeat it, but still access it without paying for it. And now you've introduced even more of a fight.
True.
By doing this and going down this road, mm-hmm. you've introduced the desire to have it.
Without paying for it.
You're without right. paying for it.
You're right.
Versus the car company's desire to offer it and make the money.
Your friend's Mercedes-Benz subscription somehow on your car. I love this. This is great. Yeah.
And therefore, ne'er the twain shall meet. Mm-hmm. People will fight over this,
yeah.
and hackers will try to code and circumvent and hack their way around to be able to discover this. That's coming for future cars.
Well, and here's the other thing.
That's the future of hot rodding.
It's craziness. Here's the other thing I think is going on here that gets completely avoided. Did you know, crazy thing, did you know that slow electric cars are faster than most all other cars? So Mercedes is going to unlock the full potential of an electric car. You have to pay us. And if you're in the electric car and you've never been in one before, you're going, this is plenty fast. This is good fast. I'm okay.
Unless we unlock more potential than you could ever handle and we're going to kill you with your car.
Exactly. But then you don't have repeat customers and they can't pay the subscription fee. So that defeats the model.
Just have access to your credit card. That's all it means.
Thomas is asking a non-car question, but I'm going to answer it quickly. He says, for me on audiobooks, which I consume a lot, fiction or nonfiction, Thomas, I'm going to say something that I'm sure somebody's going to consider fighting words. I typically don't like nonfiction books because I feel like the most nonfiction books have about 10 to 20% of useful information, and the rest of it is we had a quota of the number of pages we had to fill. I consume enough news and media and stuff that is nonfiction in my life that I want to be entertained. If I'm going to read something, I want fiction. Tell me a good story. And I have stopped books halfway through because I'm like, you can't even tell me a good story. I want a story.
Interesting.
Entertain me.
Forecaster on Instagram says, we have been publicly opining on cars for 15 plus years. So do we find that all cars have someone that could find value in them? And what are our ratings that are based on how it aligns with our individual spectrums of sacrifice? Or are there objectively good cars that can serve all buyers equally, not likely based on tool for the job, like we talk about, or more likely objectively bad cars that have no useful qualities based on any given criteria? Those are the ones that end up in junkyards. That's why junkyards exist.
True, yeah.
There is the emotional attachment mm-hmm. on cars that cost more than they should. But there's such emotional qualities. Mm-hmm. Why does a thing cost what it costs? Why do Rolexes cost so much money? There's a lot of other good COSCs, timepiece certified watches out there too.
Okay,
will also keep accurate time. But why those? Why are some cars, Porsches, vintage Porsches, why are those worth so much more sentiment? Mm. Why is Tesla's stock so high? Versus GM and Ford. Mm. Sentiment.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Really, it's emotion and sentiment. But Forecaster, you're talking about cars that have intrinsic value and are valuable to somebody. There's plenty of those. That old pickup truck sitting in the backyard.
Sure.
It has no intrinsic, no financial value whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But man, I can get it muddy and I can take it to the store and I can fill it full of stuff and drive out onto the back 40.
We're going to go through the backfield because that's the direct way to Bucky's. Well, I'm taking you there.
I'll just pull up over the curb all muddy and I'm here.
You know it. Exactly.
That kind of stuff has value to that owner, but there's also the emotional attachment of cars that belong to a family member.
Sure, yeah.
This was dad's car. This mm-hmm. was mom's car. This was part of the family. The car's been here forever. It's not really that valuable, but it's valuable to you. So yeah, those are unspeakable things. We can't mm-hmm. even define, we can't even put a value on that. But what we look for in all of our spectrums of sacrifice are the feeling mm-hmm. that car does for you. And if it doesn't generate a feeling, why are you owning it? Why are you paying money for it? Why are you insuring that car? If it doesn't make you happy, if you don't look back at it, if you don't, you can't wait to drive it. You pull up at your house. There's my car. I can't wait to drive it. It's sweet. Or springtime's coming. I get to get the Corvette, Camaro, Porsche, Lotus, anything out of the garage. And we get to go driving because we love it.
Yeah.
Then there's no point owning that car. And that's what we're looking for. Those undefinable qualities that are within many cars. Some cars they're not. And that's why you see, you know, old Cadillac Cimarrons in the junkyard. And
true. Well, but this is the reason that we do the Test Drive channel.
Yeah.
Because we're sent everything. And we're sent everything in most cases that the manufacturers really want to push. And I hate to say this, but most time what the manufacturers want to push is not the new fun thing. They would like to send you another...
Make sales, though.
Yeah, they'd like to send you another grayscale five-seat CUV.
And we'd like you to subscribe to... Oh, you want wheels.
Oh, yeah. Apple CarPlay will cost you this much a month. It's coming, I hate to say it.
It's coming.
But here's the thing, Forecaster. We get into those cars, and what we do is we understand that we are not the people buying a five-seat CUV. We are not those people. But that's what everyone is buying as far as percentage-wise. That's that they're flying off of dealer shelves. So now we're having conversations about how if this is
dealers
going to
have
be...
shelves?
You know what I mean? If,
what?
Hey, however they can get them in there. The shelves of the transport. Can we move on? Yeah, anyway. But the point is... Very nice. The point is that when you have a five-seat CUV, why is it worth buying? I'm not saying they aren't useful. I'm not saying I don't understand why the market segment is good. But if you're going to send us another one, some manufacturers make five or six of just that. Why buy this over another one? Why buy this over your competitor? They aren't fundamentally bad cars, but we start looking for a reason that they are a standout, especially in those incredibly competitive segments. We understand that you may always have bought Nissans or always have bought Fords and you'll never consider anything else. We want you to branch out in your area of cars. We want you to have a car that you love, and we understand that people have biases and reasons they'll buy things, but we're always looking for what is the thing that makes this one kind of raise its hand and go, I'm a little different. I'm a little special.
Yeah.
And that can be a gray CUV with five seats. It's harder.
It's harder.
It's harder because it tend to be just kind of a sea of sameness across all manufacturers.
On the dealer shelves.
But this is exactly, this is why we like the Mazda CX-5 so much because it punches so far above its weight. We get into some that are $70,000. I'm like, why?
It's true. Why would you waste your money on this thing?
It happens.
Question for both of us from Dieter F. asking our favorite color for cars. No black, white, or gray, or any kind of gray. Can be on hot hatches, can be on sedans, coupes, cabriolets, SUVs, and mid-engine supercars. The Cayman and the Elise do count. Favorite colors for cars.
Okay.
I think I've figured mine out. I'd definitely lean towards the cool end of the spectrum. Of course, I love all the blues, and I do love that Bordeaux Pontevecchio that came on my 05 Maserati Quattroporte.
Yeah, you did.
Neiman Marcus edition. It's just deep. It's a pool of...
You love burgundy maroon.
I like wine. I just do really like Cabernets. Like I like wine. And I just kind of connected. But it has to be with those gold wheels. I like the bronze.
You like your Iron Man look. It works.
I like the Iron Man, but I also like the bronze and gold on the blues, too. I really like that,
I see
too.
That. I actually have an additional question, but I'm going to answer this one real quick. And that is to say that, you know, the color you have on your Porsche, I'd put it on anything.
Yeah, that's called sapphire.
That's a great, it's great
amazing.
Blue. I think blue, and here's the thing. I love yellows and oranges and crazy greens, and I love, you know, think about the Lamborghini color spectrum. I love that color spectrum. It doesn't work on everything. But I do think that a really nice blue you could put on anything, and it looks classy. I'm going to add one question, and that's from Ronald on Twitter.
Oh, good.
This is a head scratcher, but I really like it because I couldn't believe this question came across, and I need you all to feel this real quick. Ronald's avatar on Twitter is a race car. It's a race Porsche. Now, I bring that up because I want that part of the perspective for this question. He says, maybe it's me, but I don't get driving on mountain roads. I don't get it. All I can imagine is getting tired of having an inner monologue with myself saying, another left, another right, another left, another right. He said, I absolutely love cars, but I can't explain the fascination. Ronald, why do you like racing? It's the same thing over and over and over and over. And guess what? We're doing this lap. The same thing again. Now, maybe you're not watching ovals, but any kind of racing you ever watch is a sea of sameness until the race is over. It's got fewer variation than your typical mountain road. The reason mountain roads are great is the same reason roller coasters are great. But it's better than roller coasters because you're not going to see that corner again. This is the reason I prefer mountain roads to racetracks, and I like racetracks. But I like the fact that I'm going to go 100 miles that way, and I will never see the same corner twice. And so there, every single time, it's that body roll, that movement. When you take a roller coaster ride, you're going to see every corner once.
I mean, my car doesn't have the thing that clamps me into the seat. I like that part, that it doesn't have the stupid clampy.
You're also not going to go upside down unless something really has gone wrong. I'm just saying, there's not going to be there's not going to be a spin unless it really, really went
you
badly.
You did it wrong.
You really had a bad day in your roller coaster drive today. But my point is, you're going to, yes, it may be another left or another right, but it isn't exactly like the one you just did. Now,
that's
you
true.
Can see some squiggles on mountain roads that are identical, but in general, you're going to have an adventure, and you're going to feel the car do different things on every corner all the way down. And even if it's a road you do a lot, you're only going to go down it maybe down one way and back the other. So you saw every corner twice, but from different sides. There's mm-hmm. a lot of variation in that. Typically, if you pick a really good mountain road, there's also scenery.
Yeah.
And there's just there's interesting weather, and there's stuff to look at beyond a racetrack. I think what you need, Ronald, is to come with us on a Utah adventure.
That's good. You're
introduce
right.
yourself
right.
to great mountain roads, and I think you'll go, I get it now. Because, I again, racetracks, mountain biking, skiing, talk about repetition. All of those things have it, even more so than a mountain road. And we love those things.
I'll add this, Ronald. When was the last time at a high level, a very complicated machine did your bidding to the point where you detected personality in a mechanical thing that is devoid of characteristics, well, not characteristics, but any sort of,
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, humanity.
You were partnering with a machine. Yeah, I get
at a high level. A machine can be as simple as a knife and it did your bidding. It cut your food.
Yeah.
But at a very high level, very complex thing that you extracted the most you could out of that very complicated thing. It did the thing you told it to do.
Mm.
And guess what? It was fun.
Mm.
And you can't do that going straight. I mean, to a point you can.
Your right foot can bend at the ankle and give you more power.
But you feel like you extracted something out of a complex machine.
That's good. I like that.
Thank you guys for writing to us. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com for all your Topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions, and most of all, your car debates. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.